Hello, this is your Polycast for Friday, June 23rd, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio newsroom. On today's edition, Al Franken reacts to the Senate health care bill, Pride and the Police in Minneapolis. Republicans in the U.S. Senate have finally released their plan to repeal and replace the Affordable Care Act, also known as Obamacare. It would cut Medicaid and reverse tax increases the former president imposed on high earners and medical companies to finance the expansion of coverage to millions of Americans. The bill would also provide tax credits to help people buy insurance. U.S. Senator Al Franken is a Democrat in the minority in the U.S. Senate. He talked with our Tom Cran about what he thinks about the bill.
Well, what we're seeing here are hundreds of billions of dollars in cuts to Medicaid, which will hurt a lot of Minnesotans. And they're doing that to pay for a huge tax cut for wealthy people.
Now, Senator Ted Cruz of Texas was just on CNN saying what we also heard from Rand Paul earlier today, two Republicans who say they're not going to support this. Republicans can really only lose three votes here. So will this pass the Senate?
Well, you know, sometimes those kind of pronouncements are posturing for, you know, leverage to get something that you might want. So we don't, you can't take those kind of things to the bank. There are also people on the other side of the caucus. Your Susan Collins from Maine, your Lisa Murkowski from Alaska,
right,
who are not going to vote for this, I don't think, because of Planned Parenthood is cut out of this. There won't be reimbursement. When Planned Parenthood provides its services, they get paid by the service that they provide. There isn't a line item in the budget for Planned Parenthood, but this is basically saying all these women, especially women, who get their primary care from Planned Parenthood are going to lose that. And so I don't think Lisa and I don't think Susan Collins will be for that, and I think there may be others that are feel the same way.
Senator, the process here, only 13 Republican senators were included here, had a chance to write this, and even one of those, I see, objected to the sort of secrecy or the lack of transparency here. What's your reaction to the way this was crafted?
This was done the worst way possible. It was completely counter to the way we did the Affordable Care Act, where we had hearings for months in both the Finance Committee and in the Health Committee, which is Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions. In the Health Committee, there were 160 Republican amendments approved or are in the bill, or in the law, rather.
Yeah.
And this is, there were 25 days of debate on the floor when it was introduced. This is the opposite. You're talking about Mike Lee, I think, when you say even he was one of the 13
right,
behind closed doors supposedly writing this. He said he hadn't seen it. So he wasn't writing it. It was probably just a couple senators and staff. So this really isn't, it hasn't been seen by almost the entire Senate until today. And then Mitch McConnell wants to move it as fast as he can.
So does this process, the secrecy, moving quickly, lack of hearings, does it change the nature of the body in which you serve the U.S. Senate?
I think it does. Since I got here in 2009, we've seen the body grow, I think, less and less conducive to bipartisanship. And there isn't 100% blame on the other side, but I'd say it is disproportional. And it's a lot of this has been Mitch McConnell. So this process is a process that not only Democrats have been complaining about, but a lot of Republicans have been complaining about it as well.
Senator Al Franken talking to Tom Cran. Dueling legal briefs have been filed in the dispute between Governor Mark Dayton and the legislature, and they shed some light on what would happen if a veto from the governor stands. Brian Baxt has more.
A Ramsey County judge will hear arguments next week on a legislative effort to overturn a line item veto by Dayton of House and Senate operating budgets. New funding would cease on July 1st. House and Senate lawyers say furloughs of hundreds of staff would begin weeks later, with staff being fully discharged if the dispute drags into the fall. The legislature would have to tap reserve accounts to operate as normal for even that long. The legislature's attorneys say the way Dayton executed his veto makes it null and void. But the governor's lawyers say he was acting within his constitutional powers. At a minimum, Dayton wants the House and Senate to open their books to prove to the court what functions are critical. Brian Baxt, Minnesota Public Radio News at the Capitol.
The American Civil Liberties Union has released a video it says shows a law enforcement officer using excessive force during a stop in Worthington. Mark Stile reports.
Anthony Prongvangsa was stopped last July. Among the charges he faces are assault, marijuana possession, and fleeing a police officer. The criminal complaint alleges Prongvangsa tailgated a squad car and at one point threatened police, saying he and his boys would get them. The video shows a drug task force official attempting to drag Prongvangsa out of his vehicle, then kneeing and punching him. During the ride to the law enforcement center, Prongvangsa protested his treatment.
Yeah, no rights coming up to me like that.
In a news release, law enforcement officials and the Nobles County attorney said they cannot comment on a pending criminal case. But they said the video shows only a small portion of what happened that day and asked the public for patience. Mark Stile, Minnesota Public Radio News, Worthington.
Twin Cities Pride organizers say they're still figuring out just how much police participation they'll agree to at this weekend's festival. Earlier this week, organizers said they would not permit a uniformed police presence in their parade. That announcement came after the release of video footage from the police shooting of Philando Castile. It has raised some hackles within the police department, including from the chief. Marianne Combs has more.
Traditionally, the Twin Cities Pride Parade starts with a police patrol car clearing the street. That's how most parades start. But in the past several years, as the police have shown an increased interest in participating in the parade, they've added more squad cars with flashing lights and dozens of uniformed officers walking behind them. That's not likely to happen this year. Video footage of St. Anthony police officer Geronimo Yanez shooting Philando Castile during a routine traffic stop was released to the public just days before the scheduled parade. That footage, along with the acquittal of Officer Yanez on all counts, has inflamed concerns about police violence, particularly amongst communities of color and the GLBTQ community. Eva Wood is the anti-violence program director at Outfront Minnesota. She says even last year, concerns were raised when it was announced there would be an increased police presence at Twin Cities Pride after the Pulse nightclub massacre in Orlando.
And a lot of the feedback from queer and trans communities of color in the area was that, well, this might make white people feel more safe. It's not going to make people of color feel more safe.
Wood works with gay and lesbian, queer and trans people who have experienced sexual violence or hate crimes. She says while often police officers respond professionally to calls for assistance, too often the encounter is less than helpful, even harmful. The Minneapolis Police Department declined a request for an interview, but Chief Janae Harto, who is openly gay, did say in a statement that she was beyond disappointed that she wasn't consulted before Pride organizers made what she called a divisive decision. Harto, who 3 years ago served as the parade's grand marshal, went on to say, "Police officers are more than just officers. They are human beings with families who are also part of this community." Despite her disappointment, Harto maintained that the team of officers assigned to work the parade will do all they can to ensure it is a safe and successful event. St. Paul Deputy Chief Mary Nash says the officers in her department are also disappointed.
I understand people are angry and we can have respect for their feelings as if they can have respect for our disappointment also. But only when we work together to try to overcome differences and to have some understanding can we move forward. If we're not working together, it certainly becomes more challenging to become better as a community and to become better as a police department.
To really understand the tensions between police and the Pride Festival, you need to go back in time. Again, Eva Wood.
Pride arises out of a history of mistreatment of LGBTQ people by the police.
In the 1960s, police raids of gay bars were common. Officers would line up patrons. Customers dressed as women were taken to the bathroom to verify their sex. Men dressed as women were arrested. But on June 28, 1969, the crowd at Stonewall Inn in New York decided they'd had enough. When the police raided the bar, the clients fought back. The riots lasted for days. Wood says Pride was born 1 year later, and the gay community has been marching every June since.
Pride commemorates people fighting back against police violence.
Obviously, the relationship with police has improved dramatically since then. Police officers usually have a booth at the Pride Festival where they answer questions and also recruit potential officers. It's not yet clear whether that will still happen this year. Pride organizers declined to speak on the record, but said they are working to come up with a solution that is, quote, inclusive of each perspective on this topic, unquote. Marianne Combs, Minnesota Public Radio News.
And that's your Polycast for this Friday, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio Newsroom.